All right, so David's headed down, 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 down. This is it's going down fast. And in chapter 13, we hit some really low points. Yet I think for David, it's going to get even worse later on. We are going to hear the story of Amnon and Tamar. Let's just dive into it. In the course of time, Amnon, son of David, fell in love with Tamar, the beautiful sister of Absalom, son of David. This would be a great time for a whiteboard. You got Amnon, who is second in line to the throne. The oldest, we're pretty certain, has already died because he gets mentioned in one location and then we don't hear from this guy. So we think he's gone. So Amnon, at this point, we would call him the crown prince. He's next in line at the throne. If David dies, Amnon would be the one that would take over. And he falls in love is probably not a correct statement. It is what the text says, but it really isn't that. He has problems controlling his lust in regards to Tamar, who is the sister of Absalom, who is also the son of David. So Absalom is third in line behind Amnon, which makes the whole thing really convoluted. Because if you're Absalom, you're not that far from the throne. All you need to do is take out two people and you're now head honcho. You get rid of Amnon and then you get rid of David, you're going to become king. And that's the path that Absalom shows later on. Absalom is the half brother of Amnon. So Absalom and Tamar come from their mother. Her name is Micaiah. She is the daughter of the king of Geshur. And so this was probably one of those arranged type treaty marriages, but it is something that becomes rather significant because she had kids early on, which got them in line for succession. And apparently everyone from Micaiah's line is beautiful. Absalom is called beautiful. Tamar is called beautiful. That's how it is. And Amnon sees the half-sister and says, maybe I should go ahead and have sex with her, which is prohibited in all 50 states today and also prohibited because some people would rightfully ask. I mean, there are some wacky laws in the Old Testament, but was there a law against this is a half-sister. So, I mean, isn't that kind of like cousin-ish type thing? No, it's not. Yeah, we still got biological issues, and that's exactly what's talked about in Leviticus 18. Do not have sexual relations with your sister, either your father's daughter or your mother's daughter, whether she was born in the same home or elsewhere. You get the idea? Sister, off limits. Now that's Amnon's difficulty because he is having these lustful desires towards Tamar. Verse 2. Amnon became frustrated to the point of illness on account of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible for him to do anything to her. She's a virgin, so she lands under the protection of Pop. But what, if she was married, would that make her more available or something? This is one of those twisted things that it is so, it's the forbidden fruit is so luscious. He is having a really difficult time with this. I don't think anyone here is going to have the specific sin problem that Amnon has. But I believe we've all probably struggled with a sin, a desire that we have that we become even slightly obsessed about. You start becoming obsessed with something just as Amnon was obsessed with Tamar, that it can actually physically make you sick. And that's exactly what happens to Mr. Amnon. Verse 3, now Amnon had a friend named Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother, which I don't know why he's called a friend, because he's really not a friend. You'll see in just a moment. But Jonadab would be David's nephew. You can see that this whole familial thing is getting really wacky. Jonadab, and he was a very shrewd man. That would be same words, sometimes translated as wise, often translated as crafty, as in a snake type craftiness. So they're tipping, the writer's already saying that we don't like this guy. Verse 4, He asked Amnon, "Why do you, the king's son, look so haggard morning after morning? Won't you tell me?" I mean, Amnon is letting this affect him to the point that everyone else around him knows. Kind of like when I was, in love with Heather and we were just friends back in the day. Everyone around her said, "Don't you know that Mark is in love with you?" And she's like, "He's not." Like, everyone knows except for, and then me too. Like, dude, what is wrong with you? I'm like, "I'm not in love with her. What are you talking about? I have no idea what you mean." It's so obvious that not only is Jonadab aware of it, but we find out that Absalom also has hints of this. And I'll prove that in a moment later on in the story. Amnon said to him, "I'm in love with Tamar, my brother, Absalom's sister." "Go to bed and pretend to be ill," Jonadab said. "When your father comes to see you, say to him, 'I would like my sister Tamar to come and give me something to eat. Let her prepare the food in my sight so I may watch her and then eat it from her hand.'" So, it's, yeah. He's essentially saying, "Can you send my sister in? She's going to cook for me and so I can watch her." You know, I actually wrote this in my margins because I was really fascinated about it, because this would be the question you ask whenever you start obsessing about something, whether it's holy or unholy. Ask yourself the question, what could you lose at this point? What could Amnon lose at this point? Everything. He could lose his life. He can lose his reputation. He's second in line to the kingship. So at this point, you would expect that the dude would be flying straight. But he is so not thinking about the repercussions that it would have on everyone else and upon him that he's just going whole hog with this story. Just like his father David. Yeah. And I was thinking about this because David... One of the reasons why most people think that David is not doing well in the parental category is because it is sometimes difficult for people who have confessed a sin. Let's take David's sexual sin. They have a hard time disciplining children in that exact same sin, because what's going to get thrown back at them? "Well, yeah, you're a hypocrite. You did it." You know, I remember very vividly sitting down, watching TV, and my mom's over there. She's all, "Mark, don't smoke." I'm looking at her like, "Are you serious?" And there's my dad. "That's right, son. Don't smoke." I got two chain-smoking parents, and they're telling me don't smoke. You could imagine that David is probably not talking too much about sexual issues with his kids. Chances are they are. I don't know how you could hide this one. I mean, where did Bathsheba come from? Mommy, daddy, you know, where'd they, what, why is she here? Well, the story is out. So, David's not doing it. So, okay, verse 6, the story goes on. "So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. When the king came to see him, Amnon said to him, 'I would like my sister Tamar to come and make some special bread in my sight so I might eat from her hand.'" So he asked David for permission. Now, I don't know, maybe at this point that's so ridiculous to think that something bad could happen that maybe David's little antennae are not up. But everyone seems to know it. Maybe David doesn't know it. "David sent word to Tamar at the palace, 'Go to the house of your brother Amnon and prepare some food for him.' So Tamar went to the house of her brother Amnon, who was lying down. She took some dough, kneaded it, made the bread in his sight, and baked it. Then she took the pan and served him the bread, but he refused to eat." Just so you know, the food that's being prepared here, it's back in those days, there was something called comfort food, and we have that too. Whenever you're sick, you just want, like, the good stuff to help you feel better, you know, chicken noodle soup or... In-N-Out double doubles always make me feel a whole lot better. Just saying. So that's kind of the stuff that's going on here. She's trying to nurse him, I guess. But he refused to eat. So I'm in the middle of that middle verse 9 paragraph. "Send everyone out of here," Amnon said. So everyone left him. "Then Amnon said to Tamar, 'Bring the food here into my bedroom so I may eat from your hand.' And Tamar took the bread she had prepared and brought it to her brother Amnon in his bedroom." you never know at this point what Amnon, I mean, what Tamar's even thinking. We have no idea if she's on to his ruse. She may know or she may not know. Again, since so many people know, you wonder. But again, what is she going to say? No? I mean, he's not asking for anything bad. Verse 11, then it happens. When she took it to him to eat, he grabbed her and said, come to bed with me, my sister. Yeah, isn't that fantastic? Not just come to bed with me, you hottie. It's like, yeah, I know you're my sister, too. This is disgusting stuff. Add to it that the words he uses, come to bed, these are words that are used all through Leviticus of illicit sexual relationships. There were two words. I guess we kind of do that nowadays, that we talk about having sex versus making love, something along that nature. This is what's happening in here. The words he uses are the actual words that he knows that what he's doing is wrong, and he even calls her his sister. He knows that the action that he is about to commit is absolutely terrible. Verse 12, don't, and I think she uses my brother very intelligently, like, no, ew. Yeah, it's like, brother, this is bad. Don't, my brother, she said to him, don't force me. Such, interesting phrase, such a thing should not be done in Israel. I don't think it should be done anywhere. Just my own personal thing. But we don't know a lot of those old cultures. You're going to find out through this that certain things have changed in the sexual realm between back then and now. Some of it for the good, most of it for the bad. But apparently maybe some other cultures would have allowed this, but she's saying, look, we're in Israel. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. But not in Israel. Israel has these specific laws. Yeah. And then there's genetics, and we just don't know about that. And yeah. But then don't get me started and talk about Adam and Eve, because I guess the gene pool was uber deep at that point. But we're going to move on. If you want to put it in your notes, a lot of the words being used here are the same words being used in the story of Potiphar and Joseph. Now, that's a little bit different because there you have a woman trying to seduce a man. The man was strong enough to escape from the clutches of the woman. Granted, she grabbed some clothing while he was leaving, was able to then to cry rape, and then he got thrown into prison because of it. Here, the tide has turned because we've got a woman who is not as strong as this man, and the words being used here are very violent words, just so you know. I mean, this is not like he grabs her by the hand and gently says, oh, come to bed, my sister. This is forcible grabbing, and it's violent. Verse 13, what about me? Where could I get rid of my disgrace? And what about you? You would be like one of the wicked fools in Israel. This next line, I think, is just a desperate line because she would say anything at this point to please get me out of the situation, because she says, please speak to the king. He will not keep me from being married to you. Essentially saying, look, if we're going to do this, go talk to David, ask for my hand in marriage. He'll let you marry me. And then everything will be legal. I personally don't think, you could speculate either way, but I think it's just one more thing of like, please let me out of here. But he refused to listen to her, and since he was stronger than her, he raped her. It's interesting because the same words show up Genesis 34:2. This is the Dinah story. When Shechem, son of Hamor, the Hivite, the ruler of that area, saw her, he took her and violated her. You'll see that NIV tries to stay away from the word rape. It does show up like three times, I think, in the NIV. But most of the times it tries to soften. It softens it in another place, which is really kind of creepy if you ask me. Verse 15. Then Amnon hated her with intense hatred. In fact, he hated her more than he had loved her. Amnon said to her, get up and go out. This is when you realize that in our realm, if we're going to talk about application, certain things that you desire probably will not fulfill you as much as you would hope that they would. And it's kind of nice talking about this right after Christmas. Did y'all get anything for Christmas that you got and you're like, I'm doing this is the guy. I've been wanting this forever. And then you get it and you're like, yeah, that's good. That's nice. And it didn't quite fulfill all of your needs. I personally love the way Isaiah put it. Isaiah uses a couple of great turns of phrases that I think really would help us out. The bed is too short to stretch out on. The blanket too narrow to wrap around you. It's the idea that you have these expectations and then you get to it and it's not big enough. I mean, the bed's too short. The blanket's too short sheeted. It doesn't fulfill you the way you want to. Same thing shows up Isaiah 55. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen to me and eat what is good and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. I would imagine that I think for all of us, if there are certain things that we really, really, really want, you can have godly wants and godly desires. But when it's something like this, when it's clear that God doesn't want it, you can want it all the livelong day and it's still not going to satisfy. Yes.
I think it's quite typical of men, maybe not all men, but they just demand and have to have sex. And the next morning he calls her a whore.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is one of those things that, in a very practical way, this can be spoken to any girl that is not married. Guys, listen up, because you should never use this. You don't use the sex thing. Just, if you really loved me, you would have sex with me, is not correct. And girls, if you're being pressured, I won't say that every guy would do this, because I don't know if that would be true, but you would be shocked, I think, at the amount of guys that after the sexual act is over, they're not going to love you anymore. They might even love you less. So if you're thinking, I want to get this guy, I guess I'll put out for him, probably not going to satisfy. It's just the way it is. And maybe you guys... maybe some people have experienced that. But that's where guys pressure and pressure and pressure, like Amnon, and they do it to the point where a girl sometimes feels no choice in the matter. Yes, because according to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Paul has given a treatise on love. The very first description that he's going to give, love is patient, is the first one. If you love me, then you'll wait. True love says, I'll wait till eternity if I need to. False love, lust, demands it now. I want it now. It's my right to have it now, and it's not. Especially in times when it is not under the purview of God, and dare I say, even if it was, men demanding this kind of stuff is not healthy and not good. And we see in Amnon a very interesting reaction, a reaction that, dare I say, happens a lot. It would be great to grab Amnon and show him those Isaiah passages. Say, see, it didn't satisfy, did it? You thought it was going to, but it didn't. You thought it would be so fun, but it didn't. And look what it's going to cost. Because now there is a huge problem. Because, Exodus 22, do I have that up there? All right, yeah. The word seduce is not a proper word there. That one should be translated as rape, which... There are certain laws in the Old Testament that I want to pull God aside and say, why? Why would this be acceptable? Essentially, if a man seduces a virgin who is not pledged to be married and sleeps with her, he must pay the bride price, and she shall be his wife. If her father absolutely refuses to give her to him, he must still pay the bride price for virgins. Which seems kind of wacky. Now, again, maybe there's some language things, I don't know, but if a man rapes a virgin not pledged to be married, he has to pay the bride price and they have to stay together, which I think is rather wrong for the female. I don't know what's going on here, so I'm going to have to leave this up to God. I have a feeling that this kind of stuff just doesn't happen all the time. Because there was also certain rules in another section of Scripture that says if a guy is trying to get with a girl and she is a virgin and she cries out, then you can kill him. If she doesn't cry out, then she was complicit in it. Maybe that's what this is also trying to say. And if she's betrothed, that would be like sleeping with a married person. You both die. Yeah. 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 Yeah, and there was, you could have multiple wives, and there wasn't this. Yeah, so that could be part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's a crass way to put it, but it is true. It is. This is a financial transaction. If you had a daughter, she was only good for fetching a high price when she got married. So, and I'm sorry, but that's how it is. You had a daughter, you wanted her to remain, which is why even David dresses her in a special robe, like, don't touch. If you do, I kill you type thing. But if you fetched a high price for your daughters, at least you got something good out of it because that's about all they were good for. Just saying. That's what it was. Historically, that's what it was. Men, little boys, did you know that the reason why orphanages began was because abandoned girls would be left by the side of the road? And Heather wants a little girl, and she'd be like, I'll go for the orphanage. No, you wouldn't trade our boys. So yes, back in those days, there was some good stuff sexually with that if you had sex, that was it. You are now married. It is done, complete, it is over. Because if you're a virgin and you had sex for that first time and then you try to hide it and later on get married and you hide that you had sex before and then you go and have sex with your husband and there's no proof of your virginity, then you could be killed. Most of the times they just put them away. They said, I throw you out as my wife. I'm not married to you. And the man was then under no contractual obligation. And then the bride's parents would have to pay back the bride price to the man. Yeah, because back in those days, if you had sex, and then with multiple people, or just even one, then you were considered unclean, no good. You would never get married, which means who's going to take care of you for the rest of your life? Because back in those days, women didn't hold jobs. It's just the way it was. So I'm thankful that we've moved forward in some areas that a woman can have a problem like this and end up not being thrown out as an outcast for the rest of her life. But there is a trade-off that sexual promiscuity then can run rampant and... It's sad. This is not what God designed it to be. And it's very, very frustrating sometimes to read this. And you ask, why is it in here? Well, on one aspect, I'm glad that stuff like this is in here, simply because it shows that God can use screwed up people like me. Also, we know that even in the Old Testament, it wasn't some fairy tale world. I mean, we sometimes think that everyone back in those days were paragons of virtue, but they weren't. We're talking about sinful beings. And I think if we honestly took a look at the world around us, we would see some pretty, pretty bad stuff. So verse 16, he hated her and said, get up and get out. No, she said to him, sending me away would be a greater wrong than what you have already done to me. She's essentially at this point saying, look, you did it. You now need to man up and take care of me for the rest of my life. Of course, now this puts him in quite a bit of a quandary that that type of marriage was not allowed, but yet the act happened. So how do you administer justice in this type of way? There is no good answer. It's just, it is such a tangled mess, and the person that suffers the most will be Tamar. Yeah, but this then gets into the thing, because he should be, actually, if we're going to take the Leviticus, if we say Leviticus overrides the other passages, you don't do this. If you do, you die. And I don't know why David doesn't do anything in this passage. Absalom will, but I don't think he's doing it for the justice of his sister. I think he does stuff that's all politically motivated. My interpretation, you may take it as you see. But she is completely upset, and he refused to listen to her. He called his personal servant and said, "Get my sister out of here. Oh, get this woman. Yeah. Get this piece of trash out of here." And it's sad, but women, you should. That's why you don't do that. And guys, when you do that, you're trash. I'll say that. Get this woman out of her and bolt the door after her. He's a piece of work, isn't he? So his servant put her out and bolted the door after her. She was wearing a richly ornamented robe. Do you have a text note on that? What does it say? What was that? Exactly. It's the exact same word. I have it up here. Genesis. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe. So we don't know what that actually means. It's not a Technicolor dream coat, but we know what it is in this thing, and that was, it was a robe made for the daughters of the king that showed who was available and who was not available. Because it says, "For this was the kind of garment the virgin daughters of the king wore. Tamar put ashes on her head and tore the ornamented robe she was wearing. She put her hand on her head and went away weeping aloud as she went." I'll say one thing. I'm glad she didn't hide, because I think that happens a lot nowadays. She could have tried to pass it off and just said it never happened and just kind of go on with her life. But she's going to admit it, and she's going to deal with it. When we find out that she stays, essentially with Absalom, is going to have, I don't know what happens after Absalom dies in a couple chapters. But she realizes, "I'm not going to be good for anything." Verse 20. Her brother Absalom said to her, "Has that Amnon, your brother, been with you?" Which, you see your sister crying and your first instinct is that? That tells you that there should have been more protection. There should have been a greater vigilance. So much so that Absalom, that's his first guess. And check out what he says. "Be quiet now, my sister. He is your brother. Don't take this thing to heart." And Tamar lived in her brother Absalom's house, a desolate woman. When King David heard all this, he was furious. And I want, I wish there was 21B inserted there, because that's all we got. And David was mad. And I have it. I put it right in my thing. And I'm like, and? What did he do? Because if you're the king, you should be able to grab Amnon and execute justice. We saw that through other things. Remember when Saul and Jonathan was going through the forest and he gets a little honey and he eats it. And Saul says, "Look, if you break this rule," and it was a dumb rule to begin with, "you're going to die, even if it's my own son." It comes out that it is a son, and he's about to kill him. He's about to kill him over honey, eating in the forest. And David isn't going to do squat one? Nothing on this? Nothing. Again, most people pontificate thinking that David just has no idea how to handle a sexual sin in his own household because he messed up so royally. It's just wrong. I mean, David, yeah. Probably a worse sin than even the rape itself, being denied stuff from your own father. You have no, there's a betrayal that's happening right there. And Absalom never said a word to Amnon, either good or bad. He hated Amnon because he had disgraced his sister Tamar. I'll tell you this, it's 2 years it takes. 2 years. And I wrote this, why wait? I mean, at that point, again, did Amnon do this to you? And she cries, that's a yes. Why not, at that point, go and take care of it? And the only reason that anyone can come up with is that this is going to be a political move that he can use later on. Because if he turns Amnon over to Dad right now, Dad's going to execute justice, and Dad will be the hero, and Dad will be the strong one. Granted, Absalom is still now, he will be in line for the throne. He's now second in command. Wouldn't it be better if Absalom executes the justice himself? Now he's showing his strength and his power, and then he'll be perceived as a better king. Well, he'd been king anyway, but would have been king with great authority and power, like I executed my own brother in a very sweeping, stirring, moving thing that happens here in a moment, or turns it over for justice. Again, I think some people might perceive, thank you for turning over justice. You're going to be an honorable king, but Absalom is a power. Absalom's a brat. This happens later on, chapter 14. You read the stuff and you want to just grab Absalom by the throat and like, are you serious? Are you really this way? And he might have been waiting for Dad to do something.
And then Dad didn't do it.
2 years though? Gosh. Like 2 minutes I would have accepted. Hey Dad, this happened. I'm really mad. That it? Yeah, and he might have wanted, yeah, and but why catch him off guard? Yeah. No. Yeah, and it could be this, again, anyone else, any normal human being would say, this is wrong, and it gets reported immediately. But Absalom waits for 2 years. So, and I'm sorry, Absalom shows his true colors later on as being such a brat that I know that something, that he is one fishy dude.
Well, Absalom wouldn't have the right to kill his brother.
Yeah, maybe that would be part of it. Maybe Absalom doesn't, but he has the right to be able to take him to Dad and say, this happened, and it should have been dealt with then at that point. So again, that's what I thought, that maybe he wouldn't have then the satisfaction of killing. Maybe he would feel like, you know, maybe like some people when they go and witness an execution, the family members can go and see it. Maybe that isn't good enough, and they're like, can I hit the button myself type thing? Because they want that. Because that's Absalom. He is now feeding his rage. This is a 2-year love affair with rage is what Absalom's going to do. Well, and that's why this family is all messed up in a big possible way. All right. Let's keep going. So why is it in there? And what lesson can we learn from that first part? Be very careful about what you want and desire, whether godly or especially when it's ungodly. All you have to do is go and ask, why Jonah? And then I want to grab Jonadab. I'm like, you're an idiot. Way to feed that on. He could have said, dude, she's your sister. Bad. And I bet then Amnon wouldn't have done anything, but he just needed that permission. I guess that's happened too. I've gotten, you know, sometimes I get the wackiest questions and I go, why'd you need me to answer that? You probably should have had that already. She's like, yeah, but I just, you know, I wanted to know if I had like an out. Yeah. Is there a way around this thing? I'm like, there's no way around it. Yeah. All right. 2 years later, when Absalom's sheep shearers were at Baal Hazor near the border of Ephraim, he invited all the king's sons to come there. Absalom went to the king and said, your servant has had shears come. Will the king and his officials please join me? Sheep shearing time was a festive time. It was like seeing the money. Like, here's the sheep and you're shearing it and you're watching money fall to the ground. So this is usually a festive time. There'd be a party. It's like payday. So it's big celebration. So Absalom, and I did wonder how many other events took place where he tried to plan this, but this is the one where it works. So he says, will the king and the officials please join me? No, my son, the king replied, all of us should not go. We would only be a burden to you. Although Absalom urged him, he still refused to go, but gave him his blessing. And I wrote on my side note, probably didn't want him to go in the first place. It was one of those, Dad, can you please come? Please say no. Please say no. Please say no. Because, yeah, knowing he's a busy king and sheep shearing time, probably you shouldn't bother the king. But if you don't get the king to go, then you could demand that the king's official representative, crown prince, show up. Yep. So then Absalom said, if not, please let my brother Amnon come with us, which also leads one to suspect that maybe David has kind of been keeping these two separate for a while because he specifically asked, like all the other king's kids are going. We want Amnon to come too. And David even says, if not, please let my brother. The king asked him, why should he go with you? But Absalom urged him, so he sent with him Amnon and the rest of the king's son. Absalom ordered his men, listen, when Amnon is in high spirits from drinking wine, so don't get drunk around brothers that hate your guts and want to kill you, I guess. I don't know if that's a lesson or not. And I say to you, strike Amnon down, then kill him. Don't be afraid. Have not I given you this order? Be strong and brave. This is one of those things that, yeah, you know, you do want justice. That, yeah, this is really, yeah, even Amnon himself doesn't even strike him down. And the idea is we're all going to have a party. We're all going to get drunk. And then when he's really like super drunk, I'm like, kill him now. You descend on him, kill him. I mean, even Absalom himself doesn't actually strike the final blow. Yeah. What? Yeah, no, this again, the servant. Like, is this what I should do? It's like giving an order that I don't know if I should follow through with it because it seems quite wrong. Anyway, and he even says, don't be afraid, have not I given you this order? So it's this is how I think it went. Strike Amnon down, then kill him. And I think there was a pause as all of them are staring at him like, are you kidding me? And he goes, oh, no, don't be afraid. Have not I given you this order? Be strong and brave. So Absalom's men did to Absalom what Absalom had ordered. So Absalom's men did to Amnon what Absalom had ordered. Then all the king's sons got up, mounted their mules. It doesn't sound very kingly, does it? Mounted their mules. Woo! No, they're not. It's like, giddy up! Okay. And fled, yeah, and trotted away. While they were on their way, the report came to David, Absalom has struck down all of the king's sons, which reminds you that gossip is often wrong. Don't believe everything you hear on gossip, because the gossip came back that Absalom killed all of the sons. Not one of them has left. The king stood up, tore his clothes, and lay down on the ground, and all his servants stood by with their clothes torn. But here's Jonadab. I just want to wring this dude's neck. But Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother, said, my lord should not think that they killed all the princes. Only Amnon is dead. Isn't that much better? That's just much. They're not all dead, just Amnon. And by the way, I was the one that told Amnon to rape your daughter. You know, why isn't he dead? This has been Absalom's expressed intention ever since the day Amnon raped his sister Tamar. My lord, the king should not be concerned about the report that all the king's sons are dead. Only Amnon is dead. Meanwhile, Absalom had fled. Now the man standing watch looked up and saw many people in the road west of him coming down the side of the hill. The watchman went and told the king, I see men in the direction of Hornoim on the side of the hill. Jonadab said to the king, see, the king's sons are here. It has happened just as your servant said. As he finished speaking, the king's son came in, wailing loudly. The king, too, and all his servants wept very bitterly. Absalom fled and went to Talmai, son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur. This is Absalom's grandpa on mom's side. So it makes sense that that's why he goes there. But King David mourned for his son every day. We find out later that Absalom and David have a real hinky relationship, that they are... You get the impression that David was more of a friend to Absalom than he was a father. That's kind of the impression you get. Because later on, Absalom dies, and David just freaks out. But even after all of this stuff, you wonder what's really going on here. And the spirit of the king longed to go to Absalom, for he was consoled concerning Amnon's death. Yeah, I mean, it took care of the problem, but again, in the wrong way. There's nothing. The only redeeming thing about this is that Tamar admitted that what happened, probably in doing that, was able to live her life with a much clearer conscience, even though still severely damaged by it. I don't know what would happen if she hit it. Be very careful about what you want, because it just may not satisfy you the way you think it will. And it is up to the father to protect the daughter. Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, nowadays there's no, you know, financial incentive, which is a good thing. It should just be done because that's your daughter. Just because I have asked every time I've dealt with a couple that has had an infidelity issue, I do eventually ask the final question: was it worth it? I mean, was it so good that it was worth all of this? The answer is always the same: not even close. It is not worth it. Let's pray. Lord, help us during this time as we ponder this to maybe take a look at our lives and what we really, really want. And you know, sometimes I think maybe, Lord, you don't give it to us because it's not what's best for us. And the bed's going to be too short, and it's just not going to satisfy. It'll be like ashes in our mouth. Lord, I'm thankful in one respect that you came into history in some really messed up situations and dealt with some very messed up people. And I'm thankful for that because you can then deal with me and with all of us sitting here. And I pray that we would know your grace extends in so many different ways. But I pray, Lord, that this kind of evil, we would see it and just be disgusted by it. But we would just hate it. And then it would not be something that we would even entertain in our own thoughts. And I pray that you would give us that burning sense of righteousness to always do what is right. Draw us closer to you, Lord. And may we never be caught off guard in this respect and go down a road we never should. So, Lord, we give to you ourselves in this time. In Jesus' name. Amen.